This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. Welcome back, Brendan. Hope you are feeling a little better.
I'm not, but that's okay.
You might notice Brendan's voice is a little deeper tonight.
I actually prefer this, so I should get sick more often.
It is not a GarageBand effect, but yeah. Anyway, so hopefully you enjoy Brendan's, you know, a more bass-heavy tone tonight.
Oh, yeah.
But we have a very good series to talk about. The Cubs go into St. Louis for their first meeting of the year with the St. Louis Cardinals, and they take 2 of 3. So as they head into an off day on Monday, the Cubs sit just 2 games behind the St. Louis Cardinals for first place in the National League Central Division. Certainly plenty to talk about with those 3 games. And, you know, Brendan, especially with the just awful Sunday Night Baseball broadcast, it was a tense one on Sunday night, especially following a one-run loss on Saturday evening. But the Cubs pull it out. Javi Baez with the big bomb in extra innings on Sunday night. And a really, really nice series win for this team that are in St. Louis.
The offense the last 2 games, yeah, they were absent. And even in that Sunday game, the umpire really just kind of dug them a hole, even though the at-bats weren't that great to begin with. It was just a bad situation for that offense. But that bullpen, like, just to read off this number, the last 26 innings, which encompasses 8 games, the Cubs have given up no runs out of their bullpen, not one. And in those 25 and two-thirds innings, they've struck out 34 guys and walked 9 guys. So the command, even a little bit better. So all around, like, this is what you want to see a good team do. Even when the offense is not clicking, at times, you still want some consistency from the rest of the team, and you're getting that from the bullpen, and the rotation is starting to find its gear. Kyle looks great. Zach Davies had a nice outing on Sunday. Overall, like, this is what you want to see from a competitive team.
Let me break down a little bit what happened in these 3 games, and then we have plenty to talk about. So on Friday, it was a rout. A little help from the St. Louis defense there late in this one, but the Cubs winning 12-3. Another really nice start for Kyle Hendricks in this game, continuing his stretch of looking basically like Kyle Hendricks. 6 2/3, 7 hits, 3 runs, but only one of them is earned, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. That's his 4th win of the season for the professor. The Cubs getting their runs. Jock Peterson started this series very quickly on the right note for the Cubs with a home run on the first pitch of the game and of the series from Carlos Martinez. He deposited that for his 2nd home run of the year. Cardinals would tie it up in the 3rd. Jock Peterson with a sac fly in the 5th would put the Cubs back on top. Paul Goldschmidt would tie things up again, but then the Cubs would go up for good. A wild pitch in the 7th inning, and then a Chris Bryant double made it 4-2. Cardinals got within 1, but then the top of the 8th happened, and in the top of the 8th, the Cubs hang an 8 spot on the St. Louis Cardinals, which is always fun. Brendan. It starts with an Eric Sogard single. The Cardinals then walk in two straight runs, Chris Bryant and Wilson Contreras taking those walks. Anthony Rizzo with an RBI double, two runs scoring on that play. Javi with an RBI single, and David Bodie with a two RBI single. That is 12, folks. So that was a very fun inning of baseball there in the top of the eighth on Friday night. Following Kyle Hendricks was Tommy Nance, Dan Winkler, and Brad Week, all of them with no runs. Nance and Week allowing just one hit, no walks from the group, and Dan Winkler striking out too. Dan Winkler, one of those guys who, you know, a lot of people, especially on Cubs Twitter, don't necessarily expect good things from him, but the dude has a 0.63 ERA and continues to get it done.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, we talked about the bullpen and their success. Brendan just mentioned some of those more recent numbers, but boy, I mean, the bullpen just really, really good for the Chicago Cubs. On Saturday, a frustrating one. The Cubs taking an early lead in this one, but it does not hold. Javi with an RBI single in the top of the first. The Cardinals would tie it in the fifth, and then in the bottom of the seventh, Adbert Alzolay allowed to go into the seventh, and Yadi Molina takes him deep. That is the winning run, and of course, the basically worst-case outcome for how to lose a game to the St. Louis Cardinals, but this was a big start for Adbert Alzolay. He takes the loss in this one, which is on the offense. The offense should have been ashamed of themselves for letting young Adbert take the loss in that game on Saturday, because he goes seven innings, five hits, two earned, no walks, and six strikeouts. That home run to Yadi, really the lone blemish. Keegan Thompson with a scoreless inning to follow. Keegan Thompson, who has not given up a run at all in his MLB career here so far in 2021. But despite the loss, this was a big, big start for Adbert Alzolay. So we will talk about that in a little bit. A frustrating one, but, you know, again, you know, kind of similar to that National Series. I think it's you know, and the game on Sunday is a one-run win that I'll get to in a second. But anytime you win a series and you're able to look at it and say, we could have swept that series pretty easily, I think you feel pretty good about it, especially when you end up winning the series anyway. So 2-1 was the final on Saturday. It was a Cardinals win. 2-1 is the final on Sunday, but it is a Cubs win. The teams go scoreless through the first nine innings of the game. We head to extra innings with the ghost runner on second, and the Cubs had the ghost runner to start the top of the 10th. Anthony Rizzo moved it over to third. Javi Baez came up looking to just get that run in, and he did that. He also did that by hitting a towering bomb to center field to bring in himself as well, and that turned out to be the winning run. Craig Kimbrell, who came on in the ninth, stayed in for the 10th. He did allow that inherited runner to score via a sac fly, but he kept his eye on the prize to lock down the win. He gets the win in this one, his first W of the year in an inning and a third of work. Zach Davies started this one for the Chicago Cubs. Five innings, four hits, no earned, three walks, and three strikeouts. Davies was walking the tightrope in this one. The Cardinals had some chances, but Davies made the pitches to get out of it. So another decent, solid, I mean, he didn't give up any runs, so a pretty solid outing for Zach Davies. Only threw 76 pitches, so David Ross was ejected, but the Cubs staff didn't necessarily want him to go through that order again, but it was a fairly efficient outing and a successful one for Zach Davies. So again, a 2-1 W on Sunday, and that is good for a series win. So that's pretty much the story of it, folks. But yeah, Brendan, I mean, these last two games, very close. The zone on Sunday night was an absolute mess. David Ross getting ejected for arguing the zone. I was honestly pretty surprised that the Cardinals manager wasn't also ejected in this one, because it was one of those where the zone was awful on both sides. Both teams had players getting called out on strikes, on stuff that just isn't strikes. It was a really, really sort of embarrassing game, I think, for the umpires and Major League Baseball to have on Sunday Night Baseball. But all's well that ends well. As long as the Cubs are the ones who come out on top, I don't really care now so much about the zone. But especially following that Washington series where you take 3 of 4, you go into St. Louis, they're in first place, your first trip to Busch Stadium on the year, your first trip against the St. Louis Cardinals on the year, and the Cubs make a statement and pull out the series win.
When Javi's good, if the pitcher misses just by a little bit, Javi is going to make him pay. And he was not doing that last year. He was not doing that earlier this year in April. He's doing that now. And that home run he hit, that slider was not, it was a little bit of a hanging slider, but it wasn't that bad of a slider. Still caught the lower outside portion of the zone. So it's all to say, when Javi's at his best, he's not missing those mistake pitches. He may still chase, he may still whiff a lot, he may still frustrate fans at times because his pitches are so wild and he'll still swing at them. But when he's doing this, he's hitting those mistake pitches, and he's one of the better shortstops in the league offensively when he does that. So all in all, this is like a good reminder of what this offense kind of used to do. It had some like 2017, 2018 vibes with the contact. You have Rizzo moving the runner over to third base, choking up as he always does. And then Javi bringing him home with that home run. So from Friday to Sunday, I know the offense did, but I'm going into the next series and I'm very confident about this lineup. There was a point in time, it's not true anymore, but after Friday, the entire lineup had a WRC plus over 100. Like even Jock, even Ian Happ, the entire lineup 1 through 8, WRC plus over 100. So it's amazing to see how fast the turnaround actually has been.
Yeah, and this weekend, especially with David Bodie getting more of those starts instead of Matt Duffy. Matt Duffy a little banged up. He does play on Saturday, but David Ross has just said he's got some bumps and bruises, which a lot of the Cubs have, unfortunately. Still without Jason Hayward, Jake Marisnyk. So they are, getting by, but still a little banged up. So, hopefully things get even. The offense has been really good for quite a stretch now, and hopefully it can continue getting better as some of these guys get healthy. Wilson Contreras getting crossed up with Craig Kimbrell in that game on Sunday night, taking a fastball off the wrist. That looked bad, but he stayed in the game, looked fine. Again, Wilson, you kind of would have to drag him off the field for him to admit that he couldn't keep going, but he did look okay. So hopefully that is all right, just a bruise or whatever. But yeah, some bumps and bruises for this team here, getting through the month of May, but they are surviving. So the first thing I want to talk about is just the starting pitching. Zach Davies, fine in the game on Sunday night. He's been better, certainly, from where he started the season, so that is obviously helpful. But I think the story from this weekend, the Cardinals do very little damage in this series, only that one earned run on Friday night. So the Cardinals only getting a few earned runs in this entire series, which is rather nice. That one on Sunday night doesn't count as an earned run because it was that inherited runner. So the Cardinals only score 3 earned runs in the series, 6 total runs if you count the unearned runs. That is a really impressive performance by this pitching staff. And I talked a little bit about the bullpen when I went solo the other night. We'll talk about it a little more in this episode, but I want to start with that front two of this rotation, and that is Kyle Hendricks and Adbert Alzolay. And we know about Kyle Hendricks. We've not been worried about Kyle Hendricks, but really nice to see him go out there and deliver that type of outing. He's had a lot of success against the St. Louis Cardinals in his career. And this was a really solid outing, Brendan, with the 1 earned run, 4 strikeouts, just 1 walk. And he only threw 83 pitches to get through 6 2/3. So again, David Ross picking those spots where he wants to go to the bullpen. He went to Tommy Nance in this instance to get the hold, which Tommy Nance did. But really nice. It's obviously just a comforting feeling to sort of just be able to, like I said, we were never worried about Kyle Hendricks, but he wasn't performing well. And we had talked a little bit about the burden that kind of gets placed on him. And he talked about that after the game on Friday night a little bit, saying he wants to be that dude for the Cubs. He knows he needs to be that dude for the Cubs. And I think you and I, Brendan, have talked a little bit in the past about how it feels a little unfair to kind of be looking at Kyle in those early April starts being like, dude, come on, you got to get there. I know, you know, it takes you a second sometimes, but you got to get there because this team just needs it. And so to be in that spot where Kyle is going out there and just doing his thing every fifth day, it does allow everyone to breathe a little easier, and it takes pressure off of the rest of that rotation, which is, you know, sort of what that burden is in the first place. But a really nice effort from him on Friday night.
What I think did not go noticed was the Cardinals' approach against Kyle that game was spot on. Like, you could tell they were sitting changeup in many, many counts. There was one at bat by Goldschmidt where Kyle sunk a changeup perfectly where Willie was setting up, and Goldie hit a line drive and it was caught for an out. But you could tell the Cardinals had a game plan. They executed, still couldn't beat Kyle. And so Kyle, that start, he was able to adapt. And what he did was, one, like, he threw four seams in counts that were changeup counts as the game went along. And in 12 four seams that he threw, he got four whiffs. Doesn't seem that much, but like a 33% whiff rate for a four seam is really, really high, especially in certain contextual situations. That's exactly what you want to see your veteran pitcher do, is adapt. Because his changeup, he threw it 21 times. He only got two whiffs. So again, it goes back to the point. The Cardinals had a game plan. They executed. Kyle probably recognized that, switched it up with Wilson, and went deep into the game and won by a blowout. That's exactly what you want your ace to do. And with that, Kyle's velocity that start, best of the entire year. His sinker averaged 88 miles per hour. He touched 90 miles per hour. This is when Kyle is at his best, when he has this 88, 89, 90 with a separation between that and his changeup, and he's able to locate his four seam where he wants to and spin in a few curveballs just to keep the other team off balance. That's what he did. Best start of the entire season, I think, even though he didn't get those whiffs with those changeups, it's just a matter of him adapting, and that's what you want to see from Reyes.
Obviously, he is the number one in this rotation, and you know, you kind of need him to get there with how this pitching staff is put together, and it's good to see him doing that. And just there's just something about him pitching against the Cardinals. He just has such a mastery of that lineup, and you
he's
just
clutch, man. He's clutch.
Yeah, he is. So that is the story with Kyle. I think, you know, again, like, if you were concerned about it at all, I don't think you should have been, but going forward, I think you can just pencil him in for a classic Kyle Hendricks start every time he's taking the mound. Stuff looks good, mechanics look good. So I think he's where he wants to be. But I think one of the main stories of the weekend, and it's ironic in that it is in the one loss, and he took the one loss in this series, but that start from Albert Alzolay on Saturday, Brendan, is really important, and I hope that it felt important to all of you, because that was a glimpse of the future. That was a kind of, it felt like an I have arrived type moment for Alzolay. And again, it's unfortunate that it comes in a loss with the way that he was pitching. If the Cubs offense had been able to put up a few runs here and there, it would have been sort of the quintessential Alzolay start. It would have been that start we look back on and celebrate and things like that. But alas, it wasn't to be, but I still think it should be that start, because he goes through the seventh inning. David Ross allows him to go back out there in the seventh, push through it, and he got beat on you know, a hanger that Yadi took out, and you know that's going to happen. But seven innings, five hits, again, not walking anybody, six strikeouts. He looked really good. But what is the real standout of this to me is that this is a young guy going out there on the road. The fans back in St. Louis for the most part, so you've got that kind of hostile territory out there, your biggest division rival, the team in first place, you're doing this all on the road, and Albert did his thing. He looked great, Brendan. This is a huge start for him, and this was one of those moments where if he was not on your radar for whatever reason as someone who is going to be a top-of-the-rotation arm for this team in the years going forward, Saturday night should have put you on notice.
And even though he got that loss, and you'll look back at that game with less, I guess, remembrance, we can't do that. This was such a milestone start for Adbear because he went deep into a game for the first time as like the guy in this pitching staff. And that was huge to see. He was dialed in, command was right on point, and on the year, he has a better walk rate than 94% of other starters, Corey. I mean, he's a young guy. This is his first full year in the rotation, doing this after completely changing his entire arsenal. This is unbelievable. And in that start, I don't know if the guns were hot or if it was just like the adrenaline being in Busch Stadium for the first time with more fans, but Adbear was throwing 1.5 miles per hour faster than his year average. So like Kyle, the velo was way up and he was commanding everything. And the slider was on point. So yeah, like he got the loss. It sucks. This is like a common thing anecdotally. We can look back and see if it's true, but I feel like the offense, especially when Adbear's on the mound, they are doing him no help whatsoever. So it's unfortunate, but I think we have to look at the start as the year progresses and trying to feel what we have with Adbear as like, you know, a competitive team and how deep we can go with them. This was the turning point, you know, a Pat Hughes turning point. This was it for him to go deep against the division leader at the moment, against your biggest rival in an opposing stadium for the first time in like almost 2 years. This was huge, Corey.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, I think that we've talked a lot about his mentality and his just the way that he goes about things. And I don't think he's going to be fazed by losing that game or, you know, giving up that late home run. I think that he's going to work through that. I think he's going to use that as a point of motivation and, you know, continue to strive to be better. You know, we saw it. It looked like he was pretty frustrated in that start before when he wasn't allowed to go further into the game. You know, obviously there was a lot of discussion about that on social media and stuff like that. And, you know, he got the chance. And I don't think that giving up the home run, you know, makes that a bad decision. I don't think anybody regrets that decision. But I think Adbear is clearly the type of guy who is going to use that as a motivation and again, continue to get better. And we've talked a lot about patience with him and his development and just how the Cubs are going about this. And it's important for these things to happen. You know, he continues to hit those milestones, right, where he's working later into games, he's throwing more pitches in games, he's doing new things still at the major league level, and this was one of them. So for him to perform that way in that environment against that team with everything going on, I think speaks more about him and more about what he's going to bring in the future than the fact that, you know, he gave up that late home run and ends up taking an undeserved loss in this one. But just really, really impressive. And Tommy Hotovy talked a little bit to Jordan Bastian of MLB.com about how Alzolay now has a 4.2% walk rate, which is the eighth best number in Major League Baseball of pitchers with a minimum of 40 innings pitched. He points out for perspective that Kyle Hendricks is at 4.9%. And Tommy Hotovy talked about how Alzolay is learning not to just chase whiffs, but trust how good his stuff is in the zone and just trust his stuff. And he got some really gross swings. You know, he had some really nice plate appearances against Paul Goldschmidt, getting some whiffs there. And you do, I think, just from an eye test perspective, you see him developing that confidence. And we see his pitches on, you know, the Pitching Ninja and things like that on Twitter all the time. And you know, he's getting guys to take all these ugly swings and everything. And I think you see it when you're watching the games that, like, he's developing that attitude of, like, yeah, like, I know my stuff is nasty and I'm going to use it, right? You just sort of are starting to see this. It's very exciting. And I think, you know, obviously at this point, he's positioned as one of the more important pitchers in this rotation, right? So obviously we're going to talk about him. But we end up focusing so much on him because he represents so much for the future of this team. And if, you know, we always talk about the extensions, the offseason, the budget, all this other stuff, right? If Saturday night is a glimpse of what you're going to get from Alzolay in the future, that looks, again, like top of the rotation stuff, top of the rotation attitude, demeanor, and everything. And if he's a guy who you look and go, we're up against the team in front of us in first place on the road, biggest rivalry, we're giving the ball to Adbert and he's going to do that. Man, I mean, talk about just how like transformative that is for Jed Hoyer's future plans and just how you're sort of envisioning this team in the years to come.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded, and the best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you've been coming up short in the health department, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/CubsRelated now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation, ongoing care for hair loss or ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is forward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/CubsRelated and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/CubsRelated now to get $15 off your first month. That's $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED or hair loss. Go to GetRoman.com/CubsRelated. Get started now to save $15 off your first month of treatment.
But let's touch on the bullpen again just for a little bit. I know I talked about them the other day and kind of just pointing out how good they've been, but just a phenomenal weekend from this group, and it is turning into quite the luxury for David Ross to be able to look at this bullpen in a way where he just trusts these guys, and he should. And with we've talked about it all year, where the length you were getting out of some of these starters hasn't been the best, and the importance of Ross and Hadavy and the coaching staff to have the ability in a lot of these games to say, you know what, I don't want this starter to work through this lineup again, right? We're coming up on, you know, the 2-3-4 in the opposing lineup for the third time or the fourth time, whatever it is. I'm going to go to my bullpen because I don't want them to see this guy again. David Ross must feel so much confidence at this particular moment in making those decisions. He doesn't have to ride the starters if he doesn't want to, unless he believes they are the best matchup and they're going to get it done, because everybody that's coming out of this bullpen is getting the job done. I mean, what a weekend from this group, Brendan.
I was thinking about this too, especially with Zach Davey struggling and Kyle struggling and Adbert on that pitch limit. Having the bullpen be so valuable may have accelerated the adjustments of that rotation to get to a point where now Davies looks better, Kyle's normal, and now Adbert can go deeper into games, because you have almost your entire bullpen with ERAs either hovering around 3 or below 3, and some of your top tier guys like around 2-ish. This is an unreal bullpen to start the season. So just to throw a few numbers here, like Dan Winkler, and this is, I don't know how this escaped me, but he's a 0.063 ERA, and these stats are not updated yet, so it will be better by tomorrow or on Monday, but he's a 0.063 ERA. And then you keep going down the list, man, like Chafin, 2.57, Tapera, 3.1, Craig Kimbrell, 1.02, Rex Brothers, 3 flat, Justin Steele, when he's healthy, 2, Keegan Thompson has not given up a run yet. So the bullpen, we've talked about it for years, most of the time from like 2017 through 2019, in a negative context. And like, I don't know if I can trust this current group, and I don't know how we look at the developmental side, because we don't really see anyone coming up that's imminent. Now it's like, all right, Steele's injured, next guy up, it's okay. It's such a refreshing feel to have. And I know we always talk about him, but he has to be talked about because he is among the main individuals responsible for this turnaround. It's Tommy Hadavy. He's taken this staff like a Dan Winkler and a Rex Brothers, and they were, you know, DFA'd Rex Brothers, this is like his third stint with the Cubs trying to make the team. He's taking these guys and he's made them high leverage pitchers almost with the snap of his fingers. And that is because of that pitch lab, because of investing in that developmental side and doing a few things that are different with that shift seam that you're hearing about and the sinkers up and in. This is such a unique style of pitching that I feel like for the first time since maybe like the mid-2010s, that's differentiating the Cubs from the rest of the pack. And that is a feeling I didn't think I would get this fast, but we're seeing it right away.
And I look like at this point, you have to have confidence in this pitching infrastructure. We talk about it all the time, but this is not the first season where we've seen this. And it's not always easy, right? When you're not investing a ton of money and you don't have kind of always established names in the bullpen, you know, there's going to be some hiccups, right? Like not every signing, not every reclamation project, things like that has been a success. But I think clearly the Cubs front office, their pitching infrastructure, however these decisions are being made, they clearly have an ability to put together a bullpen with whatever, right? And now we're in a place where you're starting to see more of those guys coming from their own system and younger guys getting chances. And I mentioned this last time, Tommy Nance is not a younger guy, but he's a newer guy getting a chance. And that is reason for even more optimism. Like, we knew from past seasons that they had the ability, like, you know, we saw what they did with Jeremy Jeffress when they brought him in 2020, you know, kind of reworking him a little bit and getting really good results from him in 2020. We saw what they did with Kimbrel when he struggled initially and how they kind of put their heads together and then settled that down, obviously, and have gotten Craig back to, you know, Hall of Fame level with where he is with everything. You know, you see guys like you mentioned, Brennan, Dan Winkler, Rex Brothers. But now that you're seeing them bringing up younger guys and guys sitting in the upper 90s and things like that, even more optimism because you're starting to believe in this system, in this developmental process. And I mentioned this last time, but if you follow a lot of the minor league teams and a lot of the minor league writers, you're starting to see these, I don't want to call them random guys because they're not. Everybody's important in the system and things like that. But you're just starting to see these names like left and right. And if you're not paying close attention, there's certainly going to be guys that you may not have heard of before, but they're touching 98, 99, 100. And it's just not a feeling you've had with the Cubs organization in the past. It feels like things have turned a corner for the way this team is evaluating pitching, developing pitching, and it's bubbling up to the top, right, where we're seeing those results hitting the major league team and the major league bullpen. But it's worth continuing to highlight because this bullpen has just been so good. It's tough to really even overstate it. Again, this number, the last eight games for the bullpen, 25 and two-thirds innings, just 11 hits, one run that wasn't earned. So no earned runs, nine walks, and 34 strikeouts. Their bullpen on the season is 3.02, and not that you can remove bad innings, but, you know, you look at some of those outings. Shelby Miller is one that comes to mind where, you know, there was a good bit of runs given. Like, you can't just remove it because it happened, right? And the Cubs did give him a chance and stuff like that. But you take out some of the real blips on the radar in terms of, like, the big explosive run outings. Those numbers look even better. So you do want to see those walk numbers continue to come down. But overall, I mean, man, like, this group is just really, really impressing right now. And I think we harp on it so much because it completely changes the configuration of this team, right? We've talked all year. You know, Jake Arrieta at this point, so far that we've seen in 2021, is a 5 or 6 inning guy, right? That's what he's given you in basically every start. And that's fine. But that's basically what it is. You know, you look at someone like Zach Davies, who's been in kind of a similar spot. Even as he started to see better results, he still is not working deep into games every single time. Adbert just got through that seventh inning on Saturday, and we're still not exactly sure how they're going to manage his innings, manage his pitch count, and things like that as the season goes along. Trevor Williams, it's been a struggle the last few starts, was better in the last one, but again, not giving you those 7, 8, you know, complete game starts. And when the bullpen is, you know, meh, or if it's bad, that's a disaster, right? It's a disaster waiting to happen. But with the way the Cubs bullpen has performed, like I said earlier in this episode, it allows David Ross to manage games completely differently. And you want to be careful. You don't want to overwork the bullpen, right? You don't want to have to rely on them for five or six innings a night. But in this series against the Cardinals, they didn't have to do that. Hendricks and Azulay went deep into those games. But it you just see the effect on Sunday when he didn't want Zach Davies to continue going in that game. And it's very easy to say, we're going to go to the bullpen because they're getting the job done. They haven't given up a run in 25 innings. So of course I'm going to turn the ball over to the bullpen. I feel the utmost confidence in that. You've got an off day on Monday. It just completely changes the way this team looks and the way that David Ross and his staff are able to manage these games. And you sort of see that on a daily basis. So that is a huge development, and all the credit in the world to the Cubs and their pitching infrastructure for getting them to this place. And I don't know if you have anything specific on him again, but I continue to just be like so impressed by Tommy Nance. It's a really great story, you know, that he's gotten up here and has gotten this chance. But it just feels like it's been a while since the Cubs have called somebody up who just comes up, he's pumping 97, 98, he's got wicked stuff, and he's just attacking the zone, you know? And yeah. It's one of those things where you need a bigger sample, guys have to have a chance to adjust to him on the offensive perspective, but I'm not sure I remember a time, Brendan, where the Cubs called somebody up, and you guys know I'm not the biggest like prospect junkie, so I didn't know much about this guy. And every time I'm watching, going where has this guy been my whole life? Like, what is going on here? Like, the Cubs just called up this guy. He's pumping strikes, he's pumping gas, and it's filthy. It's just such a pleasure to watch this bullpen right now, which, you know, it's not really where you necessarily expect to be.
I did not get a chance to talk about Tommy Nance on the last episode, so I do want to just mention a few tidbits about him. First off, I love Tommy Nance, and I was blown away. I don't think I've ever been that blown away from seeing a pitcher, like, for the first time. I did not expect that whatsoever. In his debut, he was throwing curveballs, sliders, four-seamers, and he threw a slider. And I'm like, what the hell was that? Corey, he threw a slider over 3,200 RPMs. He averaged almost 3,000 RPMs on that slider. Specifically, it was like 2,960. For qualified pitchers, that's the best slider spin rate other than Trevor Bauer, who may be like, you know, using pine tar. He's being investigated for that right now. So, never been blown away by a reliever like that ever. Full disclosure, like you, honestly, I did not know who Tommy Nance was 2 weeks ago. I may have heard the name back then. You know, Brian Smith of Bleacher Nation mentioned him 2 years ago, and shame on like me and you too, Corey, for not remembering the name, because Brian Smith mentioned that this is someone with the breaking ball that we should be watching. And so he comes in, makes his debut, and he's just throwing cutters and four-seamers like 98 miles per hour. In my memory, I cannot remember a more surprising reliever pitch for the Cubs. And it's so telling, too, because on Saturday's game, they only used Keegan Thompson out of the pen. Like, that was it. They had a rested pen, which is probably one reason why the coaching staff, I want to say Roth, but he was ejected, and I'm sure he had saying it, is probably one reason why they intended to have a short hook with Zach Davies. But regardless, guess who was in the seventh inning in a 0-0 game? It was Tommy Nance, yeah. Corey. Tommy Nance. And this is over guys who have been used in similar situations, who are rested,
well, yeah,
did not pitch.
That's the key point, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Sorry to cut you off, but it was especially interesting to see Nance get that chance on Sunday, because he did come in that spot in the seventh on Friday, and then he gets that spot in the sixth on Sunday, and Winkler and Week came in after him on Friday, but only Keegan Thompson pitched on Saturday. So you come into Sunday, everybody's really rested, and Nance had already pitched. So, like, clearly he has earned the favor of the guys making the decisions here.
I mean, so fast, too. That's the thing. I know it's like anecdotal, but even Joe Maddon, I remember when Joe was managing these guys, he had a tendency to immediately use that reliever who was called up on that day. And it seemed as if the intention there was to, like, get him going, but it never persisted. Like, when Joe did that, those guys did not seem to hold on to those opportunities. For Tommy Nance, a little bit different. He got a little bit of a tease on Friday, and then right away, when the bullpen is rested and you have other chances and other guys to use in those spots, like you said, Corey, comes in the sixth, goes back out there for the seventh. That is really telling, and I think from my perspective, small sample size be damned, but you don't see many pitchers, even in one outing, showcase that much spin on a pitch. And in this small sample, whatever, the command looks sharp. The attitude for a reliever, that's what you want. He clearly has a chip on his shoulder for not being in the league for so many years. He's quickly turning into one of my guys. I'm like, all right, I want to see him pitch all the time. And like, it's right away. And it's crazy to think about because, again, honestly, I didn't know who he was 2 weeks ago. I think many people would be lying if they said they knew exactly who this guy was 2 weeks ago.
I'm not really ashamed to say I'm not the biggest minor league guy. I've sort of joked before that I know who Brendan Davis is, and I'm big on Brendan Davis, who hit a home run in his first game of the minor league season on Sunday. So congratulations to friend of the podcast, Brendan Davis. But I don't always go deep into the minor leagues. I have enough psychotic tendencies paying attention to the major league roster that it's just sort of probably better for me to limit it to one team. But yeah, I think I would be lying if I said I'd ever heard his name before, Brendan. I mean, maybe I read it in a tweet when the Cubs made some moves or whatever, but I really didn't know about it. And yeah, it's a shame I didn't. I mean, it's such a wonderful story for the journey that he's been on in his career. I wish I had known more about it. I think I would have been more excited when he got that opportunity, but it's just really impressive to watch his bullpen right now. And it's something that, as I've said before, it really changes the outlook of this team, because you know Kyle Hendricks is going to do his thing going forward here. Adbert's looking better than he ever has. Jake's been giving you quality starts and giving you starts that you can win as a team. And, you know, you still want Zach Davies to continue trending in the right direction. You want to figure out, how to get the most out of Trevor Williams or what you're going to do there. But it's hard not to be very excited about this bullpen and what they have been able to do, because it's just, they have been lights out. And we've seen, not that I want to give the Brewers any credit, but they're just, them and the Rays are kind of two teams that you really look at that exceed at bullpen management and locking down close games. And the Cubs have played a ton of close games. A lot of their recent losses, I think it was like eight of their last, nine losses or something like that, have all been by one run. So these types of things are really important. And when you look at the starting staff and everything, the Cubs' ability to navigate three innings a night or four innings a night, things like that, really confidently with different arms, guys that give you different looks, different velos, different handedness, etc., it changes the way that the Cubs are able to win games. And you're seeing that. You saw that in this series against the Cardinals this weekend. So I think that's what we have on the pitching staff. I want to turn to the offense a little bit. And I think the first place to start really is with Javi, who, again, his overall numbers, are still not necessarily where he might like them. You know, they're not at that 2018 level, when he had a 366 weighted on base average and a 131 WRC plus, but those numbers have rocketed in the right direction, folks. And, his whiff rates and K rates and chase rates, all that stuff was wild at the beginning of this season, but a lot of that has settled down to you know, still high levels. His K rate right now is still at about 36%, which would be the highest of his career, save for, you know, his rookie appearances in 2014. For reference, in 2018, when he almost won the MVP, it was 25%. So it's still high. But remember, some of these numbers were around 45 to 50% in April and in that early portion of the year. So he has cut these down a lot, and it's bearing out in the results. He's got about a 340 weighted on base average and a 114 WRC plus. So pretty safely above league average right now. And, you know, you think about where he was in 2020 with all of those weird variables going on there and things like that. And he just looks, again, to keep kind of using, we always put the numbers out there, but you can kind of go by the eye test on a lot of these things. He just looks more like himself, right? And one of the ways you're kind of seeing that, first of all, he's dropping bombs, right? That's the easiest way to see that with Javi Baez. He's got 11 home runs on the year, 32 RBIs. So those numbers are very nice. But you're seeing him do more of that, and he did it this weekend where he's reaching down and going out and getting pitches that he really doesn't have any business hitting, and he's lining them to the outfield for base hits, right? And using the whole field and making use of junk pitches, which is not really what we were seeing in the beginning portion of the season, right? In the beginning portion of the season, we saw him whiffing at fastballs down the middle of the plate in the zone and chasing really wildly with no success. And you're just starting to see all of that calm down a little bit. And he's got himself in a really nice position right now. And for the team, obviously, that's huge. I mean, he wins the game on Sunday night. He looks like Javi Baez more now than he did in the beginning of the year, of course. But you want these guys to be playing well. I don't know what the Cubs are going to do with his situation, but I want Javi Baez to have a successful year in a contract year for Javi Baez. Right? I don't know what the Cubs are going to do, but I love Javi Baez. I don't want him to struggle going into free agency when he's up against all these other big-time shortstops. Like, if the Cubs aren't going to pay him, I want Javi to get paid. He deserves it, and I'm rooting for him. So not only just for the 2021 Cubs, but just for Javi. Like, it's just nice to see these numbers looking more normal, looking better, and just feeling more confident when he's up there than the beginning of the year. We knew that that was not who he was. We knew he was not the version that we saw in 2020. But it was, you know, sort of, I don't want to say scary, but, you know, a little unnerving when this season started not on the best note, because you were just like, oh, man, like, you know, there was so much wrong in that 2020 season, but you knew that wasn't him. And so for him to have calmed things down, made some adjustments, gotten, you know, a little like slow things down a little bit in the box, and for those numbers now to be above league average, he's doing his thing, he's driving in a ton of runs. It's good to have El Mago back.
So I was a little scared back in April. I don't know about you. So I think scary is the appropriate word for at least how I was feeling. And that's just because players like Javi, he's an outlier. Like, I always will think he's an outlier. But in that April, a lot of players with that same type of plate discipline portfolio, they age really fast. And pitchers adapt them really fast. And we were kind of seeing that, but that ended up not being true. So Javi did adapt, and that's what he does. That's what he's done throughout his entire career. Almost at, again, like the snap of his fingers. A lot of these Cubs guys have a tendency to do that. But one telling number that does match the eye test, and you don't even need these numbers when you watch these games, he looks clearly better. But going into May, he had a contact rate, 56%. Not good. Historically low. One of the worst in Major League Baseball. And going off of a year in 2020 where he was whiffing a lot as well. But since May, so May 1st to now, his overall contact rate is 73%, Corey. He's just hovering right by league average. Javi Baez, league average contact almost. And that's not coming with, like, better plate discipline per se in terms of his chase rate. His chase rate is up almost 8 percentage points in May compared to April. He's still swinging at stuff. He's just hitting more pitches. His contact rate inside the zone is up almost 16 percentage points in May from April. And that reflects what I was talking about earlier on in this episode, where if you're throwing a pitch, a breaking pitch down in a way, you have to dig that pitch. That pitch has to be in the dirt. Because if it's not, Javi's going to hit that ball hard when he's on. And that's exactly what happened against the Cardinals in Sunday. So when Javi's on, he's hitting mistake pitches. He's making contact. He's more in control. And, you know, this is not a small sample size. This is a sample size in May of almost 70 plate appearances. Contact rates, these plate discipline numbers, give or take some years and what you sample from, they stabilize in like 50 or so plate appearances. He's past that mark. You cannot use a small sample size argument. Whatever change Javi has made, at least for the current immediate future, you have to assume this continues. And the only way it does not continue is if now the scouts adapt and they're capable and the other teams adapt and Javi has to go through another adjustment phase. But for now, the way I look at it, the next series, next two series, next three series, this is who Javi is. You can expect this. Put him in the middle of the order. This is huge for this offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if there is anything else, you know, from the offense that was significant, really, in this weekend. You know, Jock continues to look good. I think David Ross clearly feels pretty comfortable with him up in that leadoff spot. You know, back when he was a member of the Dodgers, he did frequent that leadoff spot. So not as unorthodox or unique as some of the leadoff choices we've seen in the past. But, you know, he goes 0-for on Sunday night, but he did have a good series, productive night on Friday night, going 1-for-3 with two RBIs, scoring a run on Saturday night. So he's still, you know, trending in that right direction. You know, don't know if you guys, I guess we can check in on Chris Bryant, Brendan, you know, just for a second, but he had two more hits on Sunday for a while, had the only hit in the Cubs, for the Cubs in that game, 312 batting average, 1,009 OPS. So he is still in the discussion to be the National League MVP. So that's really cool. The Cubs should extend him and keep someone like that on the team for as long as they can. Mm-hmm. You know, Anthony Rizzo with a good weekend there, his OPS over 800. Javi still over 800. Nico looking good. You know, he continues to, I mean, he looks so good on defense, and his offense is, you know, coming down a little bit. I think I mentioned a few episodes ago that he wasn't going to have an OPS over 1,000 for the whole year. It's down in the 800s, right? So, you know, he didn't have the best weekend there in St. Louis, but, you know, still hitting 324, still making good contact, and almost every game turning in a play that really makes you go, wow, when he does it. From a defensive perspective, turned a nice double play in that game on Sunday night, going back, catching a pop-up, you know, kind of over the shoulder, throwing it back to second base to double off. I think it was Harrison Bader who forgot how to run the bases, I guess. But he just looks really good out there. And, you know, he's still going to have to make adjustments at the plate, but I think this was obvious. I mean, we knew that when he went down to begin the season, it wasn't a service time thing. We talked about that, and it obviously isn't, because that's not what they're doing. But I do think we're at the point now where there's no discussion about, and he's playing every day, so I don't think it's a discussion amongst the coaches, but he's your second baseman, man. He's just making that very clear. Forever. And to see how good he is on a daily basis at second base really lets you dream on, you know, how good this Cubs defense is in the future. We don't know necessarily who's going to be playing the infield with him, because everybody on the infield with him needs a contract extension. But he's just one of those guys where, like, it feels like he takes perfect routes to ground balls and to balls that he needs to go get, and it's just very impressive. And watching him kind of get this chance and sort of build that base to his MLB career has been a real joy to watch.
I think the word perfect is the right adjective yeah. to describe Nico Hoerner. He runs well, he fields well, he hits well, he has good hair, looks great out there, good high socks, number two infield. Like, this is what you, like, when you make a player in MLB The Show, like, you want to make Nico Hoerner. This is the prototype baseball player. So I'm thrilled. Like, you have this guy for 6 years, Corey. Like, this guy will be in your infield for 6 years, and then some if you extend him, unlike the other guys they haven't extended for the past 5 years. All right. So we have a three-game series coming up in Pittsburgh after the off day on Monday. So we have Jake Arrieta returning to the mound on Tuesday. That game starts at 5:35 p.m. Central Time. Jake on the year is 4-4 with a 4.46 ERA. The Pirates, as of Sunday night, it is almost midnight in Chicago. They have not announced a starter for Tuesday, but they have announced a starter for Wednesday, and that game starts at 5:30 p.m. Central, and they have Will Crow on the mound, who is 0-2 with a 4.91 ERA. The Cubs have Trevor Williams on the mound, former Pirate returning back to Pittsburgh, who is 2-2 with a 5.97 ERA. Very important for Trevor to go deep. He has not gone deep in a very long time since his first start, Corey, of the year. So we need Trevor to go deep in this start. Good opportunity with familiarity with the Pittsburgh mound against a struggling Pirates team. On Thursday, to wrap up this three-game set, we have Tyler Anderson on the mound for Pittsburgh. Tyler Anderson on the year is 3-4 with a 4.73 ERA. Kyle Hendricks back on the mound for the Cubs. Kyle on the year, 4-4, a 4.74 ERA. That game is a day game. Starts at 11:35 a.m. Central. Wow, a 9:35 start time for me here in the West Coast. Not cool, but it is what it is. On the year, the Cubs are two games above 500. That is a season high. They are 24-22. They are two games back of the St. Louis Cardinals at a 26-20 record. Below the Cubs is Milwaukee, who are at 500 with a 23 even record. And then the Cincinnati Reds are 20-25, 5.5 games back of the Cardinals. And then in the cellar where they belong is the Pittsburgh Pirates with an 18-28 record. So I mentioned him. The big thing to watch for me this series is Trevor Williams. You want to see him go deep just to stabilize the rotation 1-5. He's kind of the odd man out right now in terms of like not having that confidence. I have confidence in him. His command has not been good. That's reflected by his unwillingness to use his curveball within the last few starts just because he hasn't been able to find that fastball. So I'm looking for that fastball command early on, locate up in the zone. That way you can use his curveball down and away, slider down and away, and get some actual solid, quick, deep innings. So that's what I'm looking for. And sell our team, man. Like, it'd be nice to come away with a sweep and go into the weekend series in first place, and they have a legitimate opportunity to do it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is one of those things where they've played better against some better teams as of late, and you just want to see them take care of business against a bad team and really sort of start to distance themselves from that 500 level. You know, they're two games up now, so, you know, you have a chance here to really give yourself some space between fluctuating above, below, and as they've been for a little while now. But I just want to see him take care of business in this series, mostly because I think we're all seeing the same thing at this point. And the main way that I looked at this team, and I think you looked at it in a similar way, Brendan, was I don't know how many games this team is going to win. I don't know how many it's going to take to win this division, but this team is going to compete in that division. And I think we both said they're going to win this division. And everything we've seen to this point, and especially now after you watch them go into St. Louis and perform three night games on the road against the team in first place, right? The presumptive favorite for a lot of people once they got Nolan Arenado and had Paul Goldschmidt, right? Everybody fawning over the Cardinals, right? The Cubs have made it very clear that this team is good enough to win. They're going to play a lot of close games. There's going to be some one-run games. Those margins are going to be thin. We know that now. We knew that coming into the year. But if you have watched this team for this long and you're not seeing that, I don't really know what you're watching, right? You don't have to look at this team and believe that they are the biggest threat to win the World Series in the National League. That's not what I'm saying. But this team clearly has what it takes. They have the personnel, they have the energy, they have everything that they need to compete in this division, to win games, and to ultimately win this division. So let's take care of business against a bad Pirates team. You get yourself in a nice spot, then you come home for six games where I'm back at Wrigley Field. You guys know I take care of business when I'm at Wrigley Field. I get W's. That's what I'm there to do, all right? I'm not there to drink beer. I'm not there to hang out in the bleachers. I am there to watch the Cubs win baseball games, okay? And you have my word that that is what I am headed to Chicago to do. So it's just at that point where, and look, I know a lot of people, when they see this, I know where your head goes, right? You're frustrated about this past offseason. You're frustrated that, you know, more wasn't put into this team because you're seeing that they can obviously be successful. But it's in the past, right? It's over with. We don't need to relitigate it every time we're thinking about how good this team can be, because this team can be good as constructed with the players on the roster right now. They can win, they are winning, and they can absolutely compete in this division. So what they need to do, and we've talked about this whole season, they need to beat teams like the Pirates. They need to go on a little run here so that Jed Hoyer is not able to justify not giving them a chance to continue trying to win this division and competing in the playoffs. Jed Hoyer should be looking at this team saying this team has an awful lot of talent, and a lot of it seems pretty young and that we can kind of build around. And if I get the extensions done that I should be getting done, there's no reason that we need to be sellers at the trade deadline. There's no reason that any of this needs to get gutted or sent out or anything like that. This team can win. There are a ton of players on this team to build around and to build a future with, but let's start with 2021, because this team is good enough. They are showing you that they can and will compete for this division title. So let's keep it going. Enjoy your off day, and let's TCB against the loser Pittsburgh Pirates. So that is what we have for you. Always good. It's the first series against them of the year, but the Cubs doing the job in St. Louis, taking the series at Busch Stadium. Great series this weekend against the Cardinals. As always, we thank you guys for listening to the Cubs-related podcast, and we will be back with you later this week after the Cubs finish up against the Pirates. Enjoy your off day, everybody, and as always, go Cubs.
Get really into your favorite shows and movies all in one place with Flex, a 4K streaming box you get free with Xfinity Internet. Find what you want with your voice on Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and more. No more jumping in and out of apps. And get Peacock Premium at no additional cost. It's a way better way to watch. Learn more at Xfinity.com/Flex. Restrictions apply. Requires postpaid Xfinity Internet excluding Internet Essentials. One device included. Subscriptions required to access streaming services.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.